former Catholic priest convicted of raping a student more than 30 years ago is back in Cincinnati. Jeff Drew was released Monday after 5 years in prison. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the case, the statute of limitations for child sexual assault, and the push to reform Ohio law, are Hamilton County Prosecutor Connie Pillich. Welcome back, Prosecutor Pillich.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Ohioans for Child Protection co-founder Rebecca Surendorf. Thank you so much for being here, Rebecca.
Thank you, Lucy.
And Cincinnati Inquirer investigative reporter Dan Horn. Welcome back, Dan.
Thanks, Lucy.
And a note for our listeners, this conversation will discuss child sexual abuse. If you need to step away from your radio, our next conversation will start at about 12:35. Dan, explain the basics of this case. Who is Jeff Drew? What was he convicted of?
So Jeff Drew is a now defrocked priest who back in 2019 was a pastor at St. Ignatius in Green Township here in Cincinnati. He was charged with rape in 2019, but at the time he'd already been suspended for inappropriate touching and texting with students at St. Ignatius. While that suspension was pending, a man came forward and alleged that he had raped him in the late 80s and early 90s while he was a student at St. Jude in Bridgetown. Those charges stuck. He was arrested. He ended up pleading guilty in 2021 to charges of 9 counts of connected to that rape. He was sentenced to 7 years as part of a plea deal and served 5 of them in prison. He had already got credit for 2 years served in jail awaiting trial. And so he ended up serving 7 years and just was released from prison this week.
So, Dan, that time served, he had spent 2 years in jail awaiting trial. So he served 5 years in prison. Is that pretty standard? Is that at the discretion of the judge, or do people who've already been waiting in jail typically have that as part of the sentencing?
Well, in this case, it was part of the plea deal. So, you know, rape cases, as Prosecutor Pillich can tell you, you could end up with sentences of 20, 30 years, depending on how things go at trial. In this case, as is not uncommon in cases of child sexual abuse that occurred many years prior, the prosecutors speaking with the victim and with Drew's lawyers worked out a deal where they would not need to go to trial and test their evidence in an actual trial. And they concluded this was the best option at that time. And so it's hard to say what's typical in this case, in a case involving allegations that go back so far. It is a challenge. Any prosecutor will tell you that. And they opted for a plea deal in this case.
Well, and I want to note, we did invite former Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters, who is now an Ohio Supreme Court Justice, to be part of this conversation. He wasn't able to join us, and Dan, you're saying he explained it by saying these cases can be challenging to prosecute. Prosecutor Pillich, do you want to weigh in on that in terms of the, I don't know if you want to weigh in on the time served piece of things, or, okay.
Yeah, so in my experience, every judge in criminal court has counted time served to be included in that sentence. So him getting those 2 years while he was incarcerated pending this resolution absolutely would count towards his time of incarceration, towards his sentence.
Okay.
And Dan's right. These cases can be very complicated and they can be very emotional. Especially for child victims, but for all victims. And it's understandable when you have something that happened years ago, the challenges in prosecuting those. Sometimes you can't find other witnesses that you need to find. Sometimes the memories of those witnesses have faded. I think for most people, if they have something on their mind and they're walking down the hall, as soon as they get out the door, their brain is empty and they're thinking about something else. So when you, even if for a traumatic incident like seeing someone groom and abuse children, people can forget certain details over time. So this wasn't my case, so I don't know what the circumstances were, but it's not unusual that some cases do get pled out. It saves, it's mostly about the victims and saving them the trauma of reliving that in a public courtroom.
Yeah. Well, because I can imagine for victims, those details are seared into their minds for their lives. But you're talking about other witnesses who may have seen something odd. They mm-hmm. 30 years later, they may not remember as clearly. Rebecca, you went to grade school with the man who had the courage to go to authorities and tell them how Jeff Drew had sexually assaulted him when he was just a little boy. So you were at the same school that this man was when you were a little girl, but you also knew Jeff Drew in other capacities, didn't you?
Yes. Actually, my four kids were all at St. Ignatius the year that Jeff Drew was pastor there, which for those that are not familiar with parochial schools, gave him superintendent-like authority on that school campus. And myself and some other concerned parents, such as my co-founder, Teresa Dinwiddie Herman, we decided in the aftermath of this, after a failed request for an investigation petition signed by 1,500 Catholics, that it was time to pivot and look at our state house and take a step back beyond the Jeff Drew case and look at where in our state laws we could address this, where we could tackle prevention work, and also where was Ohio not aligning with the rest of the country. And one thing that popped up very early on for us was statute of limitations reform. And for those that aren't familiar, a statute of limitations is an arbitrary deadline set on when you can prosecute something criminally or take it to civil court. And while 20 years ago, the last time Ohio updated their SOL, we looked pretty similar to the rest of the country. Over the last 20 years, many states, over 40 of them, have actually gone back and reformed their statute of limitations. And Ohio is no longer aligning, kind of inadvertently creating like a legal sanctuary for offenders. And we think some of this is rooted in some social myths around how sexual abuse occurs. First, we think a lot of people still think of this as stranger danger, when in reality, most children are going to be sexually abused by someone who's known and trusted. Also, many people believe that this is a very rare crime. There is a fair amount of data out there from University of New Hampshire, Dr. Finkelhor, and CDC, that girls are being abused around 1 in 4. Girls will be abused before they turn 18, and boys are sitting somewhere in that 1 to 6 to 1 in 20 range. And online sexual exploitation is right now estimated at 1 in 6. So this isn't rare. But while we would hope that a child would come to a trusted adult in their life, sadly, due to the trauma or threats, but mostly the trauma, most children do not disclose. The average age to disclose, according to Child USA and the Enough Abuse Campaign and the body of research they've looked at, is that the average age to disclose is age 52. But Ohio's criminal statute of limitations expires the morning of your 43rd birthday, and our civil statute of limitations to take it to civil court expires when you're 30. Hmm. And also, and the additional myth here is that some people believe that if you just directly ask your child or your adult child about abuse that may have occurred, and they say no, they may feel assured in that moment that nothing happened. And the uncomfortable truth is that victims will disclose when they're ready, and sometimes disclosing to a parent can be the hardest. And you just may never know what you don't know. And a child, someone may be willing to talk about the grooming they experienced, but they may just not be there to talk about the assault. And so that is an uncomfortable truth, is that we don't know what we don't know. But we would like to see the court doors left open. So if there is ample evidence and witnesses that a prosecutor can bring a case, we would like to see that happen.
We're talking about the case of a former Catholic priest who pleaded guilty to raping a student more than 30 years ago and the push to change Ohio law regarding the statute of limitations for child sexual assault. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Prosecutor Pillage, I know there are lawyers out there who would argue, you know, there's a statute of limitations for a reason with criminal cases that, you know, as you were saying before, memories fade, evidence can become more difficult to gather. What are your thoughts on Ohio's law as it stands now, what you think it should be for cases like this?
Well, certainly we're all taught in law school about statutes of limitations, and they have them in civil cases too. You can, if you get injured in a car accident, you only have 2 years. If you have an employment claim, you have 180 days to get started, things like that. In the criminal world, it's also set by the state legislature what this, how long it takes before you no longer have a right to proceed on a case. And that varies for a lot of different offenses. If I'm correct, Ohio's offense for sexual assault is or rape is 25 years, but it's there's no statute for murder, no limitation for murder, and then there's a variety of others, 3 years for some small offenses and 6 years for other offenses. And part of that, I think, is for people to come forward when it's timely, and like you mentioned before, where we can put the case together. If all the witnesses have scattered to the wind and moved to the four corners of the earth, it's going to be hard for us to prosecute a case. But there are some cases where we need to make sure that, as Rebecca was saying, I had no idea about the disclosure ages from these victims, and it's horrifying to me that children go through these things at all, let alone the trauma is going to stay with them that long that they can't speak about it. So I would be very interested in seeing ways for the legislature to work to improve this. And I'm very pleased to learn that, what you said, 40 other states have already done this. So we may be able to get some research done onto those trends. And there are agencies that do that, that work with state legislatures.
Well, we've got more to talk about. We'll continue this conversation after a short break. And later in the program, some practical advice for how to manage the barrage of parenting advice. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about the case of a former Catholic priest who pleaded guilty to raping a student more than 30 years ago and the push to change Ohio law regarding the statute of limitations for child sexual assault. My guests are Hamilton County Prosecutor Connie Pillage, Ohioans for Child Protection co-founder Rebecca Surrendorf, and Cincinnati Inquirer investigative reporter Dan Horn. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dan, before the break, Rebecca was talking about the average age that victims of child sexual assault come forward. They're much older adults. I think you said 52 was the average age. And she was talking about some of the reasons why that victims have to be ready. I know that you've interviewed the man who was courageous enough to come forward in this case. I have interviewed him. We're not using his name today because he seems to be keeping a lower profile right now, which I completely understand and respect. But what I understood from him is that there's also this shame involved, which, you know, seems hard to understand for somebody who hasn't been through this, but part of the victimization is making the victim feel shame about it. Is that what you heard from this man too, about just how difficult it was to deal with this and decide to come forward?
Absolutely. And that is, Rebecca can probably speak to this as well. That's pretty typical. That's one of the main reasons so few victims come out immediately, certainly as children. They feel shame. Some cases they've been threatened emotionally or physically. They're told that this is okay, that it's a secret, though. They can't share it. Often it involves a person in a position of authority, like a teacher or a priest or a family member. And so there's a certain level of deference that happens with the victim to the victimizer. His experience very much followed that. He struggled for years. He had concluded he was never going to tell anybody. But then when word started to get around about these other incidents where he was exhibiting grooming behavior,
where Jeff Drew was,
he decided to come forward. That for him was the tipping point, was some of the attention this was starting to get. And he actually, when I wrote about his experiences, what really triggered him was a photo he saw on Facebook of someone he knew's child being baptized by Drew. And that combined with some of the attention some of these other allegations were getting prompted him to ultimately come forward.
Rebecca, that had to be I don't even know what the right word is to use, upsetting for you as a parent to hear these allegations surface about Jeff Drew. You had kids at the school where he was the priest overseeing everything. You said like superintendent-like powers. I mean, and then to know that you had gone to school with the man who came forward, what did you go through as a parent when you're hearing about all that, learning about all that?
So the way I described it in my state house testimony for the grooming bill that passed the last General Assembly was hearing that the charges were brought kind of caused a mass refiling of events that had been very normalized at my elementary school, such as the bear hugs from behind. And I remember Jeff Drew would also give shoulder massages and would put his hand down the back of boys' shirts, which I know if I saw that as an adult, that would kind of ding on your creep meter and catch your attention. You would probably speak out in the moment. But as a child, no one else in the room is reacting. Other adults aren't reacting. And I think there can be a lot normalized in the eyes of a child. But I would also like to draw attention to a lesser known element of the case, which is there was a second alleged victim that came forward. And this man was abused in the same school building in the same period of time in a similar manner. And he was just on the other side of the statute of limitations. And what would that have done in this case if the prosecutor was able to bring charges for both victims? And how would that have impacted sentencing as well and the strength of the case? And this gets back to Ohio's arbitrary deadline for the court doors, is that we let one man through and kept the other man out.
Yeah. Dan, we talked about the statute of limitations earlier, but it was a previous revision to Ohio's statute of limitations, as I understand it, that opened the door for the man who came forward to go to authorities, wasn't it?
Well, the statute's been in place for some time, I believe, and Rebecca, Prosecutor Pillage can correct me on this, but it's currently 25 years for the sexual assault for children, and the clock starts ticking at 18. I don't know that that's changed recently. There's been numerous efforts to get that changed. I know Ohio's for Child Protection is a big part of that effort, but it's been here for a while. I think what was different in Drew's case is that you had years of these quiet allegations, inappropriate touching, texting, just questionable behavior that was bubbling and bubbling. And finally, when it became public, and that's when this victim decided to come forward. And he managed to sneak in just before the statute would have expired.
Yeah. Rebecca, you mentioned briefly this law that was enacted to criminalize grooming. That was partly in response to the Jeff Drew case, wasn't it?
Yes. Once there was further investigative reporting on this case available, we realized that Father Jeff Drew actually had reporting spanning multiple decades concerning his conduct with minors that had been reported to Child Protective Services in three Ohio counties, Montgomery, Hamilton, and Butler. And then he also had three criminal investigations concerning his conduct with minors in 2013, 2015, and 2018 in Butler County. And there was no evidence that he was being put on leave pending these investigations. And we thought that it was very important that we work to define narrowly grooming a child, because it is very rare that you will ever have an adult witness a sexual assault, and it's rare for a child to come forward. But responsible adults can be trained to spot grooming and report it. And it is very distinct from normal mentoring behavior with healthy relationships between adults and children. And there's actually was examples of this in statute in Australia and the UK, which have very similar justice systems to us. When we started in 2019, no states had criminalized grooming yet, but over the course of our advocacy, that eventually was criminalized in Illinois. And then Ohio actually did pass criminalizing grooming in HB 322 last GA, and that went into effect last April, April 25.
You mentioned you were talking to Prosecutor Pillich during the break about some other states that have passed these, what did you call them, secret predator laws?
Yeah, there's hidden predator bills, which are generally three-part bills that eliminate the criminal statute of limitations for child sex abuse, extend the civil statute of limitations generally to age 55, sometimes also including vulnerable adults like the disabled. And then they also have an extra component called a window legislation that allows victims that don't fall into the other two buckets to still bring their abuse into a civil court. And the benefit of that is that you can have individuals still working in healthcare, athletics, and education settings that have victims in their past that are now ready to come forward later in adulthood, but they don't have any court doors open to them. And so there just isn't a process to identify who's offending. And Rain has some estimates that we have about a 2% conviction rate for sexual assault in our country. So for every individual you see on a criminal registry of sex offenders, we have many hidden predators in our community that may have access to children and authority.
Hmm. Can I talk a little bit about the difference between a criminal case and a civil case?
Please.
So the criminal case is an offense where someone could be incarcerated as part of their sentence. A civil case is when you go, and pardon me, for a criminal case, you have to, the prosecutor has to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt to either a judge or a jury. For a civil case, this is a lawsuit between two individuals, and the only possible penalty would be monetary or some sort of action that might have to stop, things like that. So there's no criminal penalty. And there have been instances in our state's history where some of those statutes were reduced to shorter time frames by the legislature. There have been some when they've been extended. And if for the civil case, That is a form of justice, too. The prosecutor has nothing to do with it. And it might be something that some people feel will help answer their pain.
Mm-hmm. And is the burden of proof different for a civil case?
Yes, excellent. They just have to prove by what we call a preponderance of the evidence. So if you're looking at the scales of justice and they're even, it just has to be tipped a tiny little bit towards, yeah, they probably did it.
Mm-hmm. And you had talked, you'd both talked about how there are different statutes of limitations for civil cases and criminal cases. And Dan, what do we know about where Jeff Drew is now and what he's doing? Is he getting any kind of treatment?
He is currently at the Volunteers of America facility in Cincinnati. It's a halfway house for men and women. There's a number of treatment options available there, counseling, other programs. He'll be there for, I'm not quite sure what the period of time is. He is on parole for 5 years. He'll be under supervised supervision for that long at least. He does have to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life. But for at least probably the next 6 months or so, he'll be at this halfway house. And where he goes from there, we don't know for sure.
Rebecca, I don't know if you've talked with your former classmate who came forward in this case. I guess my thoughts are with him. I hope he's, I can't imagine how he's dealing with this news. How are you and your group dealing with this information that that Jeff Drew is back in the community?
Well, we knew this day was coming. And while we had hoped that we would have seen the reforms in our state that we have been advocating for, we have not left the fight, and we're just as determined as ever. And I would also like to add that with civil suits, there's an example with a gym teacher that was abusing children in a public school that the parents brought a suit, and part of their settlement was actually further prevention and safety mechanisms for that campus. And so there is a prevention piece and transparency piece to be gained beyond monetary compensation, which I think benefits the whole community and is part of public safety. And Ohio is one of the few states to actually have a civil registry for sex offenders. And it just sits there empty because we haven't quite addressed the economics that people in their 20s very rarely come forward about childhood sexual abuse, and our civil SOL is age 30. Mm. And we also have civil tort caps here in Ohio. So that potential tool to keep kids safe today really can't be utilized yet until we address our civil SOL.
Yeah. Prosecutor Pillage, you obviously were not the prosecutor on this case. Dan just talked about how Jeff Drew is on parole for 5 years. He'll have to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life. What would you say to the community who's worried about having him back in town?
Well, one thing I want to make sure people are aware of is that before he was dismissed from prison, Jeff did come to court to try to change the rules for his sex offender registration. He wanted it to be only a period of years rather than his entire life. But I could not stand for that. And we fought that in court, and we were successful in preventing that from happening. So he will be registering with the sheriff every 90 days to disclose his address. And the sheriff sends notifications out through the mail to addresses within a certain radius. I don't remember what that radius is. But that does help people know that he's there, and people can look out for their children, their loved ones, their neighbors' kids, anyone in that area to make sure that nobody bothers them. It's just, it's hard to, if he's finished his prison sentence, that's basically what we can do. But this does give a level of observation and a level of control to the post-conviction process.
Well, I've been talking with Hamilton County Prosecutor Connie Pillage, Ohioans for Child Protection co-founder Rebecca Surrendorf, and Cincinnati Inquirer investigative reporter Dan Horn. Thank you all so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
Up next, we've all heard the advice, limit screen time for kids. But is it easier said than done for busy parents? This is Cincinnati Edition.